Always enjoy when you hear, you're here because you've usually got an opinion on almost anything, which is, you know, that's good.
That's what I thought you were supposed to have.
Well, you are. That's exactly right. What's kind of on the top of your list right now?
Well, I think I'd like to explain first what council members do and how we do them.
Okay.
First of all, we're bound by the open meetings law, which means that you can't talk to all the council at one time unless you're in a published public meeting,
right?
And it's got to be recorded and all that jazz. So the things we bring to the council are controversial because you can't talk to everybody and get their opinions. And
can't do a walking quorum.
That's right. Can't do a walking quorum.
Right.
Okay. So having said that, now you and I've talked about micromanaging and what the duties of the council member were.
Yeah.
And the duties per the charter, some of them, there's a lot more, but one of them is to see that all laws and ordinances of the city are enforced.
Okay.
And one of them is, there's more than this, but I'm just going to go two, to see that all other officers of the city faithfully and efficiently discharge their duties. And so we're like the board, and we're the CEO, but the CEO in this case has to have four votes to do anything. So you got to have it in a public meeting, talk about it, normalize it, and then vote on it.
Doesn't there have to be a balance somewhere? You can't micromanage. You can't be in the assistant controller's office every other week making sure that things are being done there, or the assistant director of code enforcement and be in there. So, I mean, at some point, don't you have to let a department head run that department?
Oh, yeah. We don't interfere with that. We don't get involved in that because you can't direct anybody. Actually, can't direct anybody to do anything, not even the direct reports. It has to be a vote of four. You can ask and try to understand what's going on, but you can't direct anybody to do anything without that meeting. That's why those meetings are controversial.
Mike Sutherland joined us this morning. I'd like to get your comments on the workshop, the basement part of the workshop, which was the joint meeting with the Planning and Zoning Commission. That got to be a little bit rancorous toward the end, and with three members deciding to leave. I'd like to kind of get your observations of that.
Well, first of all, let me thank Rafael Pinal Signs for the work that they're doing, and I'm working with them because on this last agenda, total, we had about 15 different items that we'd been working on, areas that we'd identify that need some kind of attention. And what happened was the city attorney thought that Al Signs wasn't on subject, and he thought he was. So that's a matter of opinion. I thought he was on subject.
Well, why did you think he was on subject? What this had to do with was comments that had been made by a former member of the Planning and Zoning Commission that made some remarks that were not necessarily complimentary of a couple of council members.
Yeah, well, and the point I made early on was that, have you reviewed the ethics policy? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, and you plan to work, when are you going to do it again? Because obviously, but from those remarks that they made, they're not clear on what the ethics policy says. So it's important that they treat the council members correctly when they're trying to get something done. And everybody, as a matter of fact, you know, treat everybody. So that was what we were talking about. And Al wanted to emphasize that and make sure, or Councilman Sines wanted to make sure that they were going to do that. And so everybody understood, so we didn't have to go through a process of trying to, you know, penalize somebody or whatever.
Presume people know now that the mayor and two council members decided to leave the room because they felt like it was an illegal meeting.
Right.
Go ahead.
But it was a workshop anyway, so it didn't really matter. Nobody's going to vote on anything, so no action was going to be taken.
So, and let's move on to the workshop because you had a couple of presentations that were pretty interesting. Among those, the Research Valley Partnership made a presentation. What's your sense there? How do you feel that organization is doing?
Well, I think that there needs to be more control and oversight. I realized after the meeting that when they come to us within a workshop and make that presentation, they're asking us to make sure that we want to pay for those items.
Right.
But we don't take the next step and go through the process and review them at the council level. We need to review those in closed session to see that which ones continue, which ones shouldn't continue, which ones should pay something back. And so that there's a kind of a gap in that process.
Do you see something personally that you don't think should be funded?
Well, no, not individually, but the problem I have is that I look at effectiveness, and you have to measure what they do some kind of way, which nobody does. But if you look at the permits that are issued in town, single family home wise, College Station has 75, we have 25.
Okay.
Business commercial wise, we have 30 and they have 70. So that means that we're about 30 points out. We should be 50-50, I think.
What does that have to do with houses?
Well,
Research Valley Partnership brings in industry or business, jobs.
Okay, what is that for?
Okay.
What's that for?
But there's no guarantee.
To build your town.
But there's no guarantee that those people will live within either city limit. They may buy a house out in the country.
That's the point. But we're taking our taxpayer money to give to the businesses, and if you don't get the rooftops, then you're not getting your money's worth.
Okay, that's one metric, But no, exactly. I don't think that that means you're not getting your money's worth. Those people come in, they spend money, they buy things, they buy food, they buy perishables, they buy sustainable things as well. Yeah, not just homes, they buy a lot of things.
Well, you say that, but that's not provable in the data.
I'm not sure, but could there be a city in America where they tie homes that are built to any kind of a business engine like this?
Well, in some of the state grants that you give, 30% of the employees have to be from the city that the grant's going to.
All right.
So from that, and in Austin and Travis County, when they give one of those 380 agreements, they require a certain percentage based on what it is of the employees to live in their town
or
their county.
So if they added that to the agreement between Brian and the RVP, you'd be okay with that?
Yeah, I think so, because that's part of the that's part of the payback is those rooftops, because the rooftops drive the grocery stores and everything else associated with your town.
I'm all for rooftops. I'm in complete agreement. You need that, but I just don't know that you can tie that to X company moving here, because those people, again, they can choose to live wherever they want to. You can't force them to live in Brian.
Yeah, you could. If they want the benefit of the 380 agreement, you could. They do it in Travis County.
Okay,
Austin, okay?
But
they're Longhorns, so we can't do that.
That's right. All right. I got to interrupt you. I'm sorry. We'll come back to you in just a minute. Return to thank you for your indulgence. We needed to get that done.
Great, thank you.
Live radio, you know, and that's what we got to do.
No problem here.
All right. So now let's go back before we move on to the. There was one other presentation workshop and kind of your overview, because it was a long presentation from Mark Jerica having to do with code enforcement.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Good.
He did a wonderful job. And Dr. Barfnik, his boss, is working with him very carefully. Code enforcement is a very key part of the city. And we've been understaffed for a while. As he pointed out last night, he's asked for more staff. And that was one of the issues that we pointed out in one of his presentations, that they need to change some rules that makes it easier for them and easier to enforce, and fair, though. It's got to be fair. And so he brought some of those processes to the council, and they don't issue tickets until that's the very last resort. So they try to get it done, and primarily they get it cleaned up, whatever it is.
One member of council, you in favor of adding more enforcement officers or increasing?
Oh, yes, because if you look at the numbers that he showed us, we're like 19,000 people to one code enforcement officers. Mm. Some cities are as much as 6,000 people for that few. So we need to, there need to be some balance in there somewhere.
Well, College Station doesn't arc out your neighbor. You know, you can take a picture and send it to him.
Yeah, I know. That's a good idea. And, well, what he came up with, I thought was a good idea, too, is that he's divided the code enforcement between what's on the street and what's in the yard. So on the street can be done by police. Mm-hmm. So that increases his force available to help him with that. So, he's doing a great job.
Chief Buskey on board with that, as best you know?
Yes, I know. I haven't talked to him.
Now, so what you're actually going to do then is staff is going to look at this, and then they'll come back with
Correct,
a more formal presentation.
Changes. Right, exactly.
Because this was all workshop stuff.
Yeah, right.
Anything else in workshop you want to talk about?
Yeah, the ambulance billing.
Uh-huh.
Will Smith made a presentation. That was born out of something that Councilman Raphael and I were looking at in terms of we looked at the numbers, and two different groups got discounts on what they were billed, but the people that didn't have insurance didn't get any discount.
Okay.
So we were billing them for $1,100 a ride and others for $350, and I think $800 was the insurance people. So there was an inequity there, and we started looking at that, and I was thinking that to get people to pay is what the point is, and we're losing $1.5 million on that alone. So Will Smith looked at it and said, oh, yeah, it looks like we might be able to do these things and increase our income from those people that aren't insured. So,
you know, one of the things that concerns me, and I happened to be there yesterday, I saw this, and it had to do with, you know, the level of care that's necessary to get some people in an ambulance.
Right.
Some don't need anything.
Right.
I think that they mentioned there are sometimes people with suitcases just waiting for the ambulance to get there.
So,
now, you know, I think the mayor mentioned it. It came to my mind, why that's a great place for Uber to be. I mean, you know.
I don't think they have that choice.
But when we're talking about rolling an expensive piece of equipment for a non-emergency, I mean, do we put together some sort of a measurement there? How do we do that, do you think?
Well, I think that, number one, the ambulances are totally paid for in our taxes.
Yeah.
There's about $24 million between the fire and police, about $12 million in the fire alone, and that's all covered by taxes. So what we collect above that is kind of lagniappe. But you got to be fair in your billing, and that was what we pointed out. That's where the road we were going down is that if you have Medicare, Medicaid, or workers' comp, you got $350 bill. If you got insurance, you got $800 bill. If you didn't have insurance, you got $1,100 bill.
Okay. So there's
something wrong there.
Right.
So that's what that's what Will was trying to get to.
Okay.
And for those people that you abuse it, I think there's probably a ticket that can be
need to do something.
Some
I would agree.
Probably already covered that.
I would agree. Mike Sutherland is joining us today. It's been 3 years since I think you talked about assisted home care facilities, and I think you heard a report about that again. You want to revisit that? Tell me how you feel about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, let me tell you one more thing that we've been working on is BTU and their prepaid billing.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to be able to do that early on, and they couldn't do it because of the software that had to be developed. And, mm-hmm. and our guys, Gary Miller and his bunch, are very smart. They showed a chart last night. I couldn't believe how complicated the system was. But that we could have gone into it and had the prepaid billing, and it cost us $500,000. But we're only losing, and people that weren't paying $250, so that didn't make sense. And what he said was, somebody else is developing the module, let them do it, we don't have to pay for it, and then we'll implement it when it comes out and test it. And so that's what they're doing. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to save us.
Gary will be on with us tomorrow, as a matter of fact, so he'll talk more about that. But, yeah, let's talk about assisted home in-care facilities.
Yeah, we had another incident of a home coming up where some people were reported abuse, and they were unlicensed, and they were... I think they probably should have a state license, but they don't. So I like to keep things simple. And if you have to have a license, you're going to your standards are going to be high. People are going to be taken care of properly. Somebody checks on you to make sure that happens. Without that license for the three and under homes, nobody checks on them. The only power or sway that any government agency has on those three and under is the guys that check the garbage. For medical waste, you can't put medical waste in the mm-hmm, regular garbage. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. the only thing. And so what we do, our responsibility is health, safety, and welfare. And what we do is leave those people in a very, very vulnerable spot, and we got experience to prove it. So that's why we brought it back up.
Okay. Finally, actually, after the last council meeting, the mayor had a kind of a provocative message. He had to do with that there's some citizens who've come forth to the city talking about building an animal shelter of some kind. He said between $3.5 and $4 million. Now, you've been active in that before when things changed with the animal shelter. What's your thought when you heard that?
Well, I think if we can get that donated, that's wonderful, or get some kind of grant, that's wonderful. But I don't think that's a priority with all the infrastructure issues that we have, that's a priority right now. But because Hugh Walker is another one of those guys, he's doing a wonderful job over there. He took that thing and turned it into a wonderful place from where it was, and the euthanasia rate's down, and the operation is really clicking along, and he's got lots of people involved. So, I mean, we could always improve it with a larger place, but right now he's really doing a great job.
Right. Well, and the more places that you have to take care of animals, that's a good thing,
right.
As far as I'm concerned.
And we have two right now. So.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think about also is should you require spay and neuter? Coming out of the animal facility in Brown.
I think they do.
Well, they don't require it. They give you a voucher, and there's a handshake.
Yeah. So we need to follow up. We need to follow up on that. But there's other groups in town that'll do spay and neuter for nothing. So
free. Are there?
So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. They. I don't know where they locate now, but I hadn't tracked it recently. But they get a grant from the state, mm-hmm. and there's a vet in Brenham that'll do it for $25 or $30, and they load them up in a van, take them to Brenham, and bring them back to the people.
What if you did that before they were adopted out?
They should do that, yeah. Yeah, they should do that.
You going to work on that for us?
Yes, I will. I'll ask. I can't direct.
I know. Okay.
Pressure.
Right.
I'll ask. See there?
Okay. Anything else you got for us today?
Yeah, the last thing, let's see. Memorial Day is...
we just had Memorial Day.
On Monday.
Right.
And Memorial Day is time to remember folks that got killed in war times.
Yeah.
And we had some ceremonies on Monday. The veterans had several ceremonies in town, and I appreciate the people coming out and making sure they remember those people, because without their sacrifice, we won't be what we are today.
Sure. Yeah.
And
we thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is Paw Palooza. It's at 9 a.m. on Saturday, and that's a fundraiser for the Brown Animal Shelter, and it's going to be at Hamilton Park. Everybody come out and give you money. We can build that $3.5 million.
There you go. We can do that. All right.
Thank you.
That's Mike Sutherland. Thanks for your time this morning, Mike.